Hello. Many of you, you may be seated. Some of you have quickly discovered, that's not Matt Carter up there. I don't look anything like our lead pastor. Well, here's the deal. I know some of you, customary, you come the Easter holidays, and you might have expected for him to bring you the message today. However, given that it's Easter, I thought it would be most appropriate for a woman to bring the resurrection news today. Yeah. So if you know the Easter story, that's what the women did. We're actually not looking at that story today, so I'm excited. Happy Resurrection Sunday. And he is risen. Yeah, some of you have been doing that tradition. I grew up saying that in my church. For those that have no clue what's going on, let me fill you in. I don't know how long this has been going on, but on Sunday mornings on Easter, the person up front says, "He is risen," and then the audience responds, "He is risen indeed." So let's do that again. He is risen.
He is risen.
Awesome. Well, after 4 weeks of going through a series together of following Jesus to the cross, I have been really ready for some good news, haven't you? I mean, it's been so rich and so meaningful, but my heart's been heavy. And I'm like, I'm ready for Sunday. I'm ready for Sunday. And so we're in for a treat today to hear the good news of Jesus. And he's alive. He's alive. And now the story really gets good because we're going to follow some of the disciples, some people who their spirits have been deflated. How are people going to respond when Jesus appears? How are they going to respond to this news that he actually isn't dead anymore? You see, for them, Friday afternoon left them in a place of complete and utter devastation. In fact, Jerusalem is a city of dashed hopes. That Friday afternoon was absolutely horrific. And they went into Friday evening, Jesus was buried, Saturday came, and they're stuck in the middle of the waiting and the sadness. And they're probably thinking, this isn't how we imagined it. Jesus is king. This isn't the kingdom we thought it would be. How can this be the life that Jesus talked about? And here they are stuck. They're stuck in the middle of a story with no clue of how it's going to end. But one thing's for sure is that they just don't think it's looking good. Well, today we want to look at a story of two travelers. Two travelers who are followers of Jesus, but they've been completely wrecked by his death and completely wrecked by the recent events that they have witnessed. And they think simply that their story is over. But little do they know that the risen Jesus is ready to rewrite it. So as we go through this narrative together, I want you to think about something. I want you to spend some time while you're listening to me also thinking, are there chapters in your story? Are there places in your life, maybe currently or maybe from the past, where you kind of feel similar to some of these disciples and you're thinking, this isn't how I imagined it. This isn't looking good. Your spirits are deflated. Perhaps you're left thinking, what was that, God? What was that all about? And maybe you're in the middle of a chapter like that right now, wondering, how is this gonna go down? Well, you're in good company. Join me as we read in Luke chapter 24. If you have your Bibles, you can open them up. If you have your devices with you, you can turn to that chapter. Luke chapter 24, verses 13 through 35. Is what we're going to look at today. And so word is spreading fast that Jesus has risen. Some believe it and some don't. Some are still stuck in the dark and they're unaware of the miracle in their midst. Well, let's read this together, starting in verse 13. Now that same day, which is Easter Sunday, two of them were going to a village called Emmaus, about 7 miles from Jerusalem, and they were talking with each other about everything that had just happened. So get this, there are two travelers that are leaving Jerusalem behind. They're leaving the chaos and the confusion behind, and they decided, we're out. We're going to Emmaus. And you can picture these two just kind of having this conversation about everything that has happened. Perhaps you've had those moments in your life where stuff just blew up and you and a friend or a family member are sitting down to coffee or you're on a walk and you're just going at it. And you're talking about the recent events. But catch what happens next. Verse 15, as they talked and discussed these things with each other, Jesus himself came up and walked along with them. Look at that. The star of the show, the hero, just joined them. However, they were kept from recognizing him. Isn't that crazy? They're talking about this Jesus that just died. And there he is. But they don't even know that he's with them. I don't know if it's because the appearance of Jesus physically has actually changed, and so they don't recognize him as like this resurrected figure. I don't know. Or maybe he looks like he did before, but some kind of thing's going on, and their eyes are veiled, and they're not able to recognize him. Bottom line is the mystery. They don't recognize Jesus. And they're headed to this place of Emmaus, and you'd be like, what's Emmaus? I don't know. Couldn't find much information about Emmaus, sorry guys. But there's a good chance that they live there from what we're going to learn next. And so they're on this conversation, they're on this path with Jesus, and I don't want you to miss this point, is that Jesus is present with them. They don't recognize it, they don't know it, but he's there, and he's walking with them. And for some reason, he doesn't want to blow his cover yet. And so undercover Jesus, like that, yeah, he's the best there are at that job, decides to engage them in a conversation. And you wonder, what is he going to say? I mean, how do I look? You know, is he going to do like the end zone dance after a touchdown or something? No, this is not about him at all. In fact, typical Jesus fashion, he makes it about them because he's interested in them. And he decides to engage them in a conversation and he asks them a question. He shows curiosity. So what does he say? He asks them, what are you discussing together as you walk along? And they stood still, their faces downcast. One of them, named Cleopas, asked him, are you the only one visiting Jerusalem who does not know the things that have happened there in these days? Like, come on, fella. What world do you live in? Where have you been? There is only one thing anybody would be discussing if they came from Jerusalem. There's just one thing. And the question of Jesus stopped them dead in their tracks, and their faces and their eyes are downcast. They have the posture of someone who's completely, utterly defeated. The wind in their sails is gone. And Jesus continues to play dumb. He says, what things? He wants to continue to dig a little bit. He says, what things? And again, why is he doing this? Well, I think it's because he wants to dig a little deeper, and he knows the deeper needs of their heart. And he knows that at this moment in time, these two need something, and they need an opportunity to process their grief. So they respond to Jesus about Jesus of Nazareth. They replied, he was a prophet, powerful in word and deed before God and all the people. The chief priests and our rulers handed him over to be sentenced to death, and they crucified him. But we had hoped that he was the one who was going to redeem Israel. And here you find them just kind of pouring out their hearts and saying, this man named Jesus from Nazareth, you should have met him. He was amazing. His message and his ministry, his teachings and his miracles, what he said and what he did were unmatched. They were unrivaled. There was nobody that could touch this guy. And we really hoped he was the Messiah. We really hoped. But the Jewish leaders and the government leaders, they crucified him and gave him the worst death imaginable. And I want to draw your attention to this, that after they kind of unloaded of who this Jesus was, four words capture all their grief. But we had hoped. But we had hoped, four words, that kind of sums up their spirit in this moment. And their hopes are crushed. And why are they crushed? What were they hoping for? They were hoping for redemption. They said, we were hoping that this Jesus was going to redeem Israel. They wanted someone mighty to come and deliver them, to free their nation from the tyranny of the Roman rule. Someone to come and restore Israel to the rightful place where God's chosen people were supposed to be, to make right all that had gone wrong. You see, Israel was living in the middle of a chapter that was severely disappointing. And now, with all the recent events, this disappointment had just been compounded. These two travelers had put their hope in Jesus of Nazareth. He had won their hearts, but now he was dead. They had lost their hope. And then to make matters worse, all of a sudden there's this crazy talk circulating that the guy Jesus rose from the dead and that the tomb is empty. So let's continue to read. So these two aren't done yet. They have more to tell Jesus. They say, and what is more? It's the third day since all this took place. So what are they saying by the third day? I think they're saying Jesus is dead. He's not just dead, he's dead. It's day three. In addition, some of our women amazed us. I would have liked to know a little bit more about that if I was walking with them. It says they went to the tomb early this morning, but didn't find his body. They came and told us that they had seen a vision of angels who said he was alive. Then some of our companions went to the tomb and, found it just as the women had said. But they didn't see Jesus. Imagine a bunch of men who didn't believe the women. Perhaps that the story was embellished or exaggerated somehow. I mean, I don't know. Some things don't change, but it was as just the women had said. They brought back the truth, and it was empty. And can you just hear the frantic, like anxious, like they're reeling? What is going on? They're devastated, and now there's like chaos that has happened. And these two travelers are just unloading all this on this stranger about their terrible, horrible, no good, very bad day. I took that from a book. So their world has just blown up. Now, before we go on, I want us to take a time out for a second here. We can kind of chuckle at the engagement of these two with Jesus, but I want you to think about your own life. I want you to think about if there's any part of this story that you're resonating with. Perhaps you've had times where you have felt like this. Perhaps your world has been flipped upside down or your hopes have been crushed before. Now, I'm not talking about the time in third grade when the boy went hold your hand at the roller rink. Okay, I'm not talking about that type of disappointment. Or maybe not getting the tax refund that you thought you were going to get. That seemed relevant to today and the date, right? Or heaven forbid, you know, the order that you had at the restaurant, they ran out of the food and they said, you're going to have to pick something else. And I'm thinking, well, if you don't have guacamole chipotle, we've got a problem. I'm not talking about that kind of a bummer. I'm talking about something that you were pretty certain, you were convinced of the outcome that you wanted, and then something happened, and it's like the rug was pulled out from underneath you. Something that totally mattered to you deep down, and then in a moment, it was just squashed. Perhaps you didn't get the promotion you were banking on, or the job. Perhaps you found out you couldn't get pregnant. Maybe you got cut from the team, or you failed the class. Perhaps that relationship, it fell apart. Perhaps that diagnosis was the worst case scenario. Perhaps that grown child you've prayed for so much has gone off the rails. We all have these moments, don't we? We have these moments that things aren't turning out the way that we had hoped. And so we look to God and we say, why? Or we seek to understand, we try to make sense of it. And what I have found in life, that when I do that, I am left with more questions than I am answers. And what I need more than anything is I need perspective. Not the kind of perspective the world offers, but the kind of perspective from Jesus. Let's read how he responds. He says to them, "How foolish you are, and how slow to believe all the prophets have spoken. Did not the Messiah have to suffer these things and then enter his glory? And beginning with Moses and all the prophets, he explained to them what was said in all the scriptures concerning himself." So there you have undercover Jesus becoming Professor Jesus and giving them a survey of the Old Testament. A survey, a story that they thought they knew. And he starts to unpack the mystery surrounding himself, but specifically he wants to address this idea that the Messiah had to suffer because they got that part wrong. He said, "You're slow to believe this," and he really wanted them to believe this, so he honed in on that. See, Jesus wants to offer us a perspective change. He wants to shift, to reorient our thinking when we're in the middle of these places where we feel like all hope is gone. And it's specifically what he was able to see in their hearts, because he's really good like this. Jesus sees his hearts, is he saw that their Messiah, their view of the Messiah and suffering was mutually exclusive. They said these two things, they don't go together. Not the Messiah, he's invincible. Not the anointed one, not the coming king, the one who would deliver us. He's not going to suffer. But in Jesus' perspective, suffering was the only way to redemption. It's the very thing they longed for. But why was that the case? Why was suffering the only way to redemption? Well, because suffering would accomplish for them what they couldn't do for themselves. It would absorb the sin and the darkness in the world and make room for hope to rise again. You see, Jesus wanted much more than political redemption for his people. He wanted a redemption that would expand to the entire world to heal and restore for all people what had been incredibly broken, and what had been incredibly broken for me, and what's been incredibly broken for you. the relationship with God, with each other, and with ourselves, all these things God wanted to redeem. Why? Because God's plan is simply bigger. It's bigger. And what we often don't see when we're stuck in the middle, when we're stuck in the middle of these stories of hopelessness, is that we just kind of have this tunnel vision, don't we? We just kind of see it like this, and we see it the way we want to see it, and we see it the way we want it to go. But we often need a new perspective, and we need one from God. Why? Because, well, He's God. He sees all things. I'm not saying we need a new, I'm not saying we want it. I'm saying we need it. Jesus sees the past, and He sees the present, and He sees the future. He sees all the events. He sees all the people. He sees all the places affected. He sees it all. And it's so important, don't miss this. Jesus is able to see the unfolding story. He's able to see the unfolding story. Even though we can only see what's in front of us, He sees the whole picture. And more importantly, He sees your heart in the middle of it. And Jesus' biggest desire is to walk this unfolding story with us. And so, He continues to walk with these two. It says, as they approached the village to which they were going, Jesus continued on as if He were going farther. I find that kind of funny. What did that look like? He's just pretending to keep walking, like, are they going to stop me? Well, see you later, guys. He wasn't even going anywhere. He's like, I'm here for you. But he didn't want to say anything. But they urged him strongly, stay with us, for it is nearly evening, and the day is almost over. So Jesus went to stay with them. Can you believe this? Jesus took the whole journey with these two away from Jerusalem, and now the day is almost done, and He chose to spend that time with them. Why? It's because they mattered. It's because those two mattered. Jesus left, like I said before, He left Jerusalem behind a mass of people that would have loved to see Him, and they left it behind. They invite Him to stay in, and you know, hospitality is a big part of culture, and so that was just kind of a normal invitation to do that. And so now you're wondering, well, what happened next? When's He going to reveal Himself? Well, watch this, verse 30. When Jesus was at the table with them, He took bread, He gave thanks, He broke it, and began to give it to them. Isn't that so Jesus-like? Give thanks and take bread and break it. Then their eyes were opened and they recognized Him. And then, oh, He disappeared from their sight. And they asked each other, were not our hearts burning within us while He talked with us on the road and opened the Scriptures to us? I mean, can you catch this moment? All of a sudden, their eyes are opened and they see who had been with them all along was Jesus Himself. And Jesus chose to reveal Himself in a very ordinary moment. Nothing grand or extravagant. Just an ordinary moment of sharing a meal with His followers. And then He disappeared, like His job was done. So what was their response? I love this. They said, were not our hearts burning within us while He talked with us on the road and opened the Scriptures to us? You got to catch the tremendous, dramatic change that just happened with these two. Earlier on in our story, where were they? They're in a place of saying, but we had hoped, but we had hoped. They were completely leveled by their devastation. And now they're in a moment of saying, were not our hearts burning within us when we spent that time with Jesus? So what happened? What happened between this we had hoped to this place of were not our hearts burning inside of us? I'll tell you what happened. They encountered a risen Jesus. That's what happened. They encountered a risen Jesus and their hearts became alive. It just kind of, bum, 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 bum. It began to beat again. It was as if something in them had died. And then they had this encounter with Jesus. And it's like he breathed life into them again. He breathed life into them again. Listen, this is so important. Jesus wants to light up something inside of you that has gone dark. The risen Jesus wants to have an encounter with you and light up something that has gone dark. Maybe you find yourself in this space with your face down and saying, but I had hoped. But Jesus is offering his presence and he's offering his perspective to walk with you and bring you to a place where you could say, my heart is burning inside of me. I feel alive again. That's what the risen Jesus can do. And you know, sometimes I hate this about God, but it's true, is that he wants to change us before he changes our circumstances. And that's what Jesus did on the road. He addressed what was inside, and he turned their hope into a place where they could hope again, where stuff inside was alive and stirring again, and they were able to see it, that it's because we talked and walked with this, with Jesus of all people, and he unpacked scriptures for us, and he gave us the perspective that we needed. And just as Jesus did that with those two, I believe from the bottom of my heart that he wants to do that for you too. I believe that he wants to do that for you too. And maybe there's something in your heart stirring right now. And if that's the case, I would just quietly say, God, I'm listening. Speak. And these heart-stirring moments have the potential, if we're listening, to stir us to action. And that's exactly what happened with these two friends, these two followers, is that in their joy, they returned. And we read in 33, they got up. Well, I guess they didn't stay in Emmaus that long. They got up and they returned at once to Jerusalem. There they found the 11 and those with them, the women, assembled together and saying, it's true, the Lord is risen, and he's appeared to Simon. And then the two told him what happened on the way. Can you believe that? I wonder if the others were jealous. Like, are you serious? Jesus came up and spent that whole time walking with you, and then he went and broke bread with you and stayed at your house? They probably just loved it. And they told him all that had happened, and how Jesus was recognized by them when they broke the bread. Hope has returned. The Lord has risen and he's alive. And now it's like they have a whole new story to tell. The day before, it was looking pretty bad. All things bad. And now today, it's looking really good. And it flipped. Why? Because they had an encounter with Jesus that says, let me retell you that story of scripture. Let me kind of just shift your perspective a little bit. And let me show you why it was necessary for me to go through what I went through for you. And he was able to show them, yes, indeed, I am still the Messiah. Nothing has changed. Everything is still going according to plan. And they were able to see that. So what does this whole story mean for us? Well, for one, I think it tells me that no matter how dark or ugly or impossible something may seem, it's not the end of the story. It's not the end of God's story, and it's not the end of your story. Out of suffering can come great redemption. I must say that again. Out of suffering can come great redemption, can come a new life and a new chapter because Jesus makes that possible. And that's the Easter message. The risen Jesus can breathe life into you again and bring you to a place where you say, my heart, it's not my heart burning inside of me. If God can bring hope out of the crucifixion, he can bring hope out of anything. Frederick Buechner says it well. He says, the resurrection means that the worst thing is never the last thing. I must say that again. The resurrection means that the worst thing is never the last thing. Never. It just isn't. The story isn't over, and for you, your story isn't over. So the question is, do we believe that? Do we actually believe this? And if we were to look at our life or our lives, the past in our life or present, or even people that we know, we'll find ourselves saying, in some areas, where's the hope? Or God really let me down back then, or right now. And we find ourselves saying the same thing that the traveler said on the road to Emmaus. Those four words. But we had hoped. But we had hoped. And maybe you make it more personal and you say, I had hoped. I had hoped. How would you fill in that blank for yourself? I had hoped. How would you fill that in? Where are you perhaps stuck in disappointment? Is there a chapter in your life that you haven't even, it's almost like the no-fly zone, or it's the closed door, it's the closet. You're like, I'm never going to look at that thing again. It's just a lost cause. We're not touching it. Or maybe there's something right now that just feels unfinished or confusing. What would that be for you? Well, in just a second, we have a gift. Now, I'm going to give you some instructions. On this side of the row, on the far edge, to those of you sitting on the edge of your row, on this side, if you look underneath your seat, there's a stack of these journals. And if you'd be so kind to pick up that stack, take one of these journals and pass them to your right down the row. So if you're sitting on this side of the aisle of your row, reach underneath, grab that stack of journals, and pass them down. And it says at the top, as you can see, I had hoped. I had hoped, and underneath, the story isn't over. So if you were to fill up the pages of this journal, how would you finish the sentence, I had hoped? These journals are meant to give you a place to write about the chapters in your life that are still leaving you wanting. Maybe they leave you upset or sad or angry. And it's a place for you to write about those things, to put it on paper. And by doing so, you're essentially saying, Jesus, what are you going to do about this? Can you redeem this? And making it in the form of a prayer. And maybe today's a new day for you, where your faith can be redeemed, where your faith is strengthened, and you actually believe that God can redeem a part of your story. And I'm going to join you on this exercise. I have plans on the beach this week, not in Indiana. Just me and Jesus by the ocean, and I'm going to take some time and write in my journal. And this is something I've done all along and just learning my story, and I've actually had titles for chapters in my life. And it's a topic I think about a lot. And I remember about a year ago, I was in a boutique. I don't always frequent boutiques, but I was with some friends on a weekend. And when I was there, I saw this hat hanging. And it says, "Love Your Story." And I thought it was a cute hat, and I liked the message. But then something inside of me said, "Gosh, can I wear that hat? I don't love my story. I don't love my story." And I kind of, and I was in there, and I was wrestling with God, and I said, God, do you think you could bring me to a place where I actually loved my story? And as I stood there staring at this overpriced hat, I thought, you know, I'm taking you up on it, God. By faith, I'm going to believe that you're going to be able to help me love my story. Now, I want to clarify something. I know there are chapters in our lives that are very could be very dark or evil, and I'm not saying we love that part, but what I'm saying, we love what can come out of it. We don't love the darkness of the crucifixion, but we love the beauty that came out of it. And that's what I'm saying, is that I believe that God can redeem all these pieces in our story and bring joy to those places. I mean, maybe you relate with me. I've had loss of friendships. I had a career-ending injury that left me with back issues. I had church pain, unfulfilled dreams and longings, trauma from when I was a kid that still affects myself and my family to this day. That's just a little small glimpse of these places where I say, God, can you continue to redeem that? And let me warn you, this is risky. This is risky. Why? Because we open ourselves up to God intervening in our life, and he loves to do that because he loves to redeem stories. And oftentimes, if my experience has shown me anything, he's going to surprise you, and it's not going to be in the way you expect. Like moving to Muncie and preaching Easter 8 months later. He'll surprise you. But he wants to remind you that your story's not over, and that there's always hope. And this isn't about fairy tale endings. Scripture doesn't teach us that. God gives us something better. He promises that God is always working and that he is with us and that he can bring beauty out of the pain. And if we trust him, he will lead us to somewhere good. Now I want you to turn your attentions to the screen, and we have Cliff and Jewel's story to share with you.
I never entered a songwriting competition before, partly because, like, actually the work to do it, and it's beyond my ability.
Mm-hmm.
But Jules possesses said characteristics and qualities and abilities. So.
Oh, man. Yeah, so I do remember, it must have come up in my search, there's a specific one that's connected to the Merlefest Festival, which is in North Carolina. And I had been to that festival. It was in 2012, and so I got excited because I loved it. It was a great festival, and my family's down there, and I was like, ooh, if he does well in this, maybe we could get to go for free.
Because it's expensive.
That was the motivation.
You put it in the songwriting competition, and actually a couple other songwriting competitions, and then we totally forgot about it. So skip two, now we're driving, you know, we get there to the festival, and it's this huge festival. There's like 60,000 people at this festival, and there's like, how many stages? Like 10 stages. And then finally, you know, we get to go out and play our song, and we played well together, and it was a blast. And sure enough, they were like, we won for our category. Yeah, we won for our category. We get done with it, and we kind of go back to our hotel or whatever, and I don't know if it was on the drive back, or it might have been the drive back home.
Yeah, it was.
we just had, I just felt like I was, as I was on stage, I was just imagining, I was imagining Jules out in the audience, back in whatever, you know, when she was there by herself. So what she didn't say was she was alone at that time, and she was kind of wandering about, traveling all over the world, and she had went to that festival by herself. And so she's just like, you know, and the juxtaposition of imagining Jules out there in that audience, you know, that many years ago and where she was standing now. It was like she went from being just kind of nobody in the crowd whose heart was just sort of in shambles. And I was on the other side of the country and I was in the same place. My heart was in shambles. I was by myself and we hadn't connected at that time. And just seeing her on stage, you know, and playing music and being like the focus, you know, of a song, it was just like, it kind of blew me away. And I just remember saying, man, look where we are now. Like, look where we've come. Look what life has given us. Because I felt like we were patient and faithful. And it was like, you know, and we got a family, you know, and we got something that we didn't have at the time. And it was just a pretty big moment. So I later wrote the song, Song for Merlefest, which the main hook in it is look where we are now. And it goes through the different elements of the pain that we had. And then the very last line is stand in front of this crowd, redemption and hope for the lost and let down. Jesus didn't skip the cross. He didn't skip that point, that part, you know. Unfortunately, we just still have those stories. We still have our challenges and our trials that we have. And like, it's a reminder that that you can't skip the hard stuff.
I think that's our story of just transformation is possible and it's worth it and it's really beautiful.
Look where we are now. On the other side of this cloud, where the storm once rushed in and filled us with doubt. Look where we are now. All the lights on the stage shine down on our hearts, but hide all the rage. Look where we are now, where the field once stood tall, peered down from its perch at our bodies on the ground. Look where we are now, staring hurt in the eye, walking right through its door, sitting down by its fire. Look where we are now, held tight in the arms of the lover who won't quit just because it gets hard. Look where we are now, blood still flows in our veins. When you take your last breath, love our drama the same.
stand in front of this crowd. Redemption and hope for the lost and let down. Look where we are now.
Thank you, Cliff and Jules, for sharing your story with us. I love that line in this song, redemption and hope for the lost and let down. Look where we are now. I'm sure if we were to hear the full story of Cliff and Jules and all their chapters, there'd be many places where they probably would have written, I had hoped. I had hoped. Those places where their hearts were in shambles. But as Cliff said, he said, we were patient and we were faithful. And they continued to walk with Jesus. And their story wasn't over. And your story's not over either. Perhaps this morning as you hold that journal, you might be thinking of somebody that wasn't able to come today, and they're in their own place of disappointment, and maybe they could use some encouragement. You know what? Grab an extra one, and you can give it to a gift to them. Here at Come Away, we want to invite people to find hope in Jesus, and so if that fits, go ahead and take an extra one. Well, today represents the best day in all of history, that Jesus is alive and his resurrection reassures us that the worst thing is never the last thing and God can turn it around. We are part of a bigger story that is being written, and that's a story of hope. Let me pray. Jesus, we are so thankful for what today means. Thank you that you rose from the grave, that you offer us hope, that you beat death, that you defeated the evil one. And because of that, God, we can live in victory and new life. And God, for anybody that's here today where perhaps their heart has stopped beating in places or their world has gone dark, God, would you breathe life into them again? Would you give them the light of you, Jesus? And God, would you bring us to a place that if we're in the spot of, I had hoped, that you can bring us to a place where our hearts are stirring inside of us and we can look back and say, look where we are now because of you, Jesus. All praise to you. We bless your name. Amen. Now go with the full assurance that your story is not over because Jesus is alive. Go in peace.